Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Union Digital Bank, a fully digital bank with a mission to empower every Filipino everywhere by providing easy access to digital financial services for consumers and businesses. Union Digital Bank partners with startups to co-create financial products to meet the needs of their customers. Contact Union Digital Bank to explore how they can power your platform with embedded financial services. For more information about Union Digital Bank, please see their website at www.uniondigitalbank.io. Stay updated by following them on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Also by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today.
I think the number one thing that we will end up seeing, and I think I've seen it in Foxmont's portfolio companies and some of the other investors here, is a founder that has been overseas to a more developed country and has seen what good execution looks like, even studied or worked overseas and has seen what that looks like. And then they come back here and they have the nuanced local view, right, of the Philippines, let's say, for example, or if it's another emerging market country.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast, and it's a brand new year. We have a brand new season. Oh my God, this is going to be turning to our year 5. And I'm very excited because we finally had the guy, and one of the guys actually, that are leading one of the biggest and one of the best incubators, newest incubators. I think they started last year when we started it out, and Founders Launchpad. And I've seen, I think, a couple of if not one cohort already. And again, my good friend Alea Ladaga, who I've known since Kubo days, is part of their team. But without being carried away, let's welcome to the show Mr. Jay Handler of Founders Launchpad. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Right, again, very impressed with what you guys have done. Big fan of what you guys do. I've seen the legit founders that you've done. I also know that you guys work with my angel and very good friend, Mark Kuiman. So that's very good.
Yes.
But before I get carried away, I need to ask you the $1 million question. Jay, what's your hustle?
Yeah, man. So right now it's Founders Launchpad. So you kind of nailed it on the intro. But yeah, we're building a, let's say, for ease of understanding for the public, a YC style accelerator. So you mentioned incubator. We actually decided to change the designation, let's say, from incubator
to
accelerator. Only because incubator meaning they come up with the idea. The incubator comes up with the idea and hires a management team to come in and execute. Whereas the accelerator, founder-led ideas, that where they apply in and we interview and accept based on their idea. But anyway, so yeah, Founders Launchpad, it's an accelerator program, again, YC style. We do a 12-week program, plus or minus 1 or 2 weeks. I think we ended up doing 14 last year. So that was our first one. We're iterating on it this year for sure. But yeah, we have it's super hands-on mentorship program. We started it because we thought there was a real need for a bit of hands-on guidance for a lot of these founders locally. There's a lot of talent, a lot of potential here in the Philippines. And I think the VC scene is quite new. So a lot of the companies that are making major strides and big successes are, you know, they have a lot of, let's say, foreign founders there or foreign educated founders, which is awesome, which is great. That's totally fine. But this VC scene locally is super new. So these guys, these Filipino grown guys that are feeling real problems in different, you know, wherever they're living, different provinces around the country, they might have awesome solutions. And those are the guys we're really trying to find and help. So we saw that there's a couple of firms that are investing at a bit later stage. We're really coming in more grassroots. So the hustle is building this program out as best we can, helping, you know, Filipino founders, also foreign founders that want to operate here.
But absolutely,
that's the hustle, man. We're trying to do two cohorts a year. So we'll be doing, we did 6 investments on the first one, and it'll be hopefully 8 to 10 on the next and thereafter.
Sounds exciting. And that's what I want to deep dive on, because that's, again, and thank you for also breaking down what the difference of an incubator and an accelerator is. A lot of people mistake each other for the two, right? But now at least you know that if it's an incubator, it's an idea that was basically preformed by the incubator, and then you get a team to actually execute it. Accelerator, you have a founder-led idea and you assemble the team, or you shoot your shot and also accelerate it and achieve really intense milestones over the past, the next specific period of time to get to at least not even product market fit. A lot of people don't even get there. Don't throw that word around loosely.
Yeah.
It's at least problem solution fit, or at least an MVP that works, that is generating traction or revenue.
Right.
All right. Now, before I get carried away, man, before we even talk startups, what type of deals, what type of startups you look for, and the type of investment you guys do, what I need you guys to buckle up. Or no, not you guys, only you. I need you to buckle up real quick, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All righty. And that's what we need to basically discuss, right? I want to understand real quick, what's the origin story? Okay, so we're going to go all the way back in the States, right? What was it like growing up? And is there any people that you got inspiration from in terms of hustling growing up?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Stamford, Connecticut. I grew up there I had 3 older brothers, 2 of them much older, because we had a different mom, shared the same dad. They ended up living in our house growing up. So they were, you know, 12 and 15 years older than me. So it was nice. I had somebody in between my dad and my other brother, Alex, who's 2 years older than me. So I kind of had this middle mentors, let's
middle
say. That, yeah, exactly. So that helped me mature a lot faster, having those guys that were, you know, not my dad age, but in the middle age. Helped me mature a lot faster. So, but everybody finance in my household. So my dad studied economics at University of Chicago and was in.
Oh, wow.
He's one of these brainiac guys, but he's awesome and super sharp and always pushed us really hard to you know, study and work hard. Those were the values in the family. That's what he valued. So work was always at the forefront of everything. Mm-hmm. My mom, on the other hand, she was the one we went to for, you know, You know, ah, dad, scary. He's yelling at mom, help. You know, this is, it's the standard dad, tough mom.
Good cop, bad cop relationship.
Exactly. So, you know, it was kind of funny growing up in that household. I mean, we're looking back at it now. But my mom also super business driven. She worked on Wall Street for a while as a municipal bond trader at a company called Oppenheimer. So she was there until she was in the World Trade Center. And then those came down,
no.
But she wasn't, she was on the way in, you know, everyone has one of these, stories, but we were, you know, my brothers were making a scene in the morning. So she was a bit late, but she wouldn't have been, she was in the second tower that got hit. So, you know, everybody on her floor got out anyhow, but still there's always one of those crazy.
That's intense.
Yeah. So after that, she decided to go back to work and raise us essentially. So anyway, nice. The point is super business minded household, business, finance, all of this. And then, yeah, right. Growing up, big sports fanatic, always playing rugby, football. My dad pushed me into rugby because he was born in Argentina.
So. Rugby, not American football. So I didn't have no helmets.
No, I know. It was a bit more intense, but contrary to popular belief, rugby is safer because, you know, you don't have these weapons on your head. So they tend to not lead with their head. So it ends up being safer.
You just go after the body every time.
After the body. Yeah. Avoid. Yeah. And you're not tempted to drive in with head, which is
you don't do spears.
No like spears. Yeah, form tackling, right? So anyway, the contact sports. I mean, growing up with three older brothers is always, you know, I was getting beat up all the time. So contact didn't scare me. I loved it. The team sports was always something I enjoyed a lot.
Right.
So yeah, that was great. I mean, that's kind of my upbringing. I didn't have any, you know, it was more run of the mill. I didn't have any crazy stories in that sense, I guess, for my
upbringing. No, but here's the thing. Sports really, if you're a sports fan, I always think make it akin to business, because the discipline that you form in hustling for sports and really pushing your body to the limit to achieve a common goal is very similar to a business.
100%.
Which a business is a team sport, right? You can't just win on your own. You can't be like, hey, there's an I and win. Like, no, you need help.
Yeah.
To win. Now, what I want to understand. So as you're doing this, what are these core foundational skills that you learned? Because you said business is part of the household. It's part of, what are the types of conversations you guys were having early on? Are we talking about stocks? We're talking about bonds? Yeah. Are we talking about the big short? What are we talking about?
Yeah, we're covering all of that stuff. I mean, well, one of the interesting things my dad had us do as part of his like kind of intense style of focusing on learning and work and all of this growing up, we couldn't eat dinner until we read a newspaper article. I mean, I was like,
oh, shit. Wow.
I had to come to the table with a New York Times article to tell him about before I was able to get my food. So,
wow.
Yeah, he was, he's a super intense guy, but
Easy Pickens was obituary. You just read that. All right, dad, here's the people that died today.
Yeah, no, but you have no idea. I ended up going through the whole newspaper, picking the shortest article, just so I could eat some dinner. No, but I'd come to the table. I mean, all my brothers had to do it, and we would tell him. The point is, he wanted us to be. I mean, he grew up in Argentina and lived in Israel for a while. Went to school there, and then came.
Oh, wow!
And speaks a ton of languages and lived all over the world. So he values, I guess, like globalism, let's say, and world experiences and understanding what other people in the world are dealing with and different viewpoints and all of this. So. He said, yep. And it had to be from the international section, by the way. We couldn't tell him about local news. So, I think that was something that we spent a lot of time on. And that was always a contention point because I was hungry after football practice and I just wanted to eat. And he made me read the newspaper. But it was really good. I mean, it's a super valuable skill to
have. I love it.
Then I was able to, you know, when I went to my friends' houses, their parents were talking about whatever was going on in the world. Not like 12 years
Jerry old. Jerry Maguire or Maury Povich. Right?
I'm chiming in at 12 years old. And like, what the hell is this kid's up? Like, what do you know? So it was kind of funny and kind of cool in that sense. But yeah, I mean, my dad is a lending business. He has a debt fund where they do real estate lending. They lend to developers.
Wow.
Who are trying to build homes or multifamily properties or now some office buildings. So a lot of my brother Alex had started going into the real estate world from a pretty young age, even before college. Those conversations were always real estate related and lending related. Yeah. For my mom's side, we were always talking about the markets. I guess when she stopped working, on Wall Street. She ended up doing day trading as a fun for herself while we were in school and stuff, because she was kind of a full-time mom at the time. So yes, markets and what she was buying and why, and you know, it just super a big focus on what was going on in the world and the impacts on the financial markets and on people. I mean, even in faith, I remember that whole, it was great.
Make sure.
Yeah. So that, I mean, really a business focused household. My older brothers also are in some sort of finance. So my oldest brother's a trader and he's a soybean trader. So a commodity, global commodity trader. So it's pretty cool. He's a physicals guy. So this, the on the screen traders and the physical traders. So on the screen are future. They trade futures of future prices of different commodities. He actually buys, you know, thousands of metric tons of soybeans from the US and sends it to China. So he's actually feeding the world. That's a really cool profession, actually. Anyway, so everybody's doing some sort of business and finance. There aren't, you know, that was the focus of the household.
Okay. Now, in early ages, when you went to school or probably in college, I saw that you went to the dirt of South in Tulane.
Oh yeah,
in Yalens to study. But what was that? What was that like? And then also, did you do any side hustles while you were in the dirty South?
Yeah, man, that's a really good question. First of all, New Orleans is an unbelievable city. I mean, we really enjoyed the food scene there, the party scene.
Gumbo, baby.
Yeah, you know all about it. It's an incredible place. It's a dirty, grimy, you know, mesh of just party and drinking and fun.
Mardi Gras style every time.
Yeah, Mardi Gras was a huge event there. The parades, what an amazing place to go to school. That's for sure. I would recommend it to pretty much anybody. It's a fantastic place. A huge population of the people from the Northeast actually went there. So there's a lot of guys from near where I was from that ended up in New Orleans, which is kind of funny. Yeah, man. So I've definitely always been entrepreneurial in some light. So, I mean, I think being trained by, again, my brother was the mentor. He was a trader at the time. And they had this, like, you know, I think that there's this, I'd say one that I still use to this day, I would say is what he likes to call it, it's trader's intuition. And you kind of just feel something's wrong.
Yes.
With what's happening. So
a spidey sense.
Yeah. It's a bit of a feeling. I don't really know, you know, it's a real feeling, but it's more like, you know, a lot of people tend to follow the leader, let's say, and the leader is usually like a lot of the times wrong. And
so Piper. You have like
trying to understand what the actual problem is. Do they know? Like there's an inkling. It's almost like a sixth sense. Yeah. You said it right. That you get when something's not right. So that's when you can take action to mitigate whatever risk is arising from that feeling you're feeling. And that was one of them. On the other side, it's just quick math, I guess. I haven't been so much of a math guy, although I'm an accountant. I have a CPA degree. I did a finance undergraduate. So, you know, math is something I know pretty well.
That's good. Now before we take our first break, I want to ask you real quick. So after college, what was the first job that you took and how did that come through? Because now you're all about the numbers, and then those numbers come different forms and formats, right? But at the end of the day, there's stakes involved. These are not just random numbers you crunch. There's lives, stakes, and even companies and economies that get affected. What did that do like? So you mentioned you became a CPA. What's the first fish out of water experience for you?
Yeah. So by the way, I did my undergraduate in finance, and then I said all my friends were into investment banking, and I just didn't want to do that at all. It's like I knew I didn't want to just be like him. I heard all the horror stories. I knew the guys in internships. It was just not what I wanted.
You went contrarian.
Yeah, exactly. There's the trader intuition. It's like, this doesn't
you saw the pattern.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like what I want to be doing or even the right thing to be doing. So yeah, I went to get I got offered for the Tulane to do the Master's of Accounting, and they paid me a bunch of money to do it, meaning I didn't have to pay that much to get the master's, and it was kind of a no-brainer. I said, whatever, in 1 year I can get a master's in accounting, it doesn't cost me much, and I don't know what I want to do yet. So worst case, I have a master's in accounting and I'll figure it out next year. So yeah, I did that. And then as soon as I started my master's, I got a job at Deloitte for the year after once I finished. So I started working at Deloitte in Manhattan once I graduated with my master's. I was in there, just in between my start date and ending school, I studied for four CPA exams, which were so, you know, this was a nightmare. This took me 8 months to finish completely. Wow. One of them, I got a, you know, you need a 75 to pass. On one of them, I got a 76. And I was like, oh God. The others I did quite well on, but this one was right. An audit is just, just terrible. And nobody enjoys doing this audit work. It's like unbelievable. So I had to study it and I had to just get through it. But so that was a nightmare, but now I have it. And then I went to work at Deloitte. You need to work under a CPA for one full year to get your license. So it's the easiest thing to do is go work at a big four for a year. That's kind of the plan. I went in, I was working with some guy, you know, maybe I hope he does hear this actually. He was awful. I mean, he was just such a bad
role
guy
model.
Under. He was a really just very rude and not so helpful. Granted, we were all working from home, you know, so that makes it hard on everybody. But, you know, just not so thoughtful in the sense that, you know, I'm just starting, or everybody in our group is just starting and expecting us to just know how to do everything. And he's trying to teach us on by sharing his screen and just getting, he was just not so nice of a guy and it didn't really teach me well. So it just wasn't, I just got a bad taste immediately. Then I started working with some other teams, you know, because I was working with Blackstone and some other big like partners group, some of these big private equity firms, because I was in the tax practice and we were working on setting up their fund structure and doing their accounting and tax work for their massive funds, like Blackstone and Partners Group. They have these huge private equity funds that have many, many partners, and they have some very intense offshore structures.
Wow.
All these shell entities and pass through tax and all this stuff. So it's super complicated. It wasn't interesting to me. Like, just to me, it wasn't that interesting. I'm not like a corporate.
You want to learn how that works? You watch the movie The Laundromat. That's how it works.
There you go.
There you go.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you just
watch that movie,
if you do that, you know everything instantly.
Yep. You'll understand how the world works and how wealth is passed around without having to pay taxes. Now let's break our first break. And when we come back, I wanted to actually do a deep dive a bit about the Deloitte hustle and how you got into the Seaborn Capital and all the way to how you got into Founders Launchpad. Of course, we're going to talk about Founders Launchpad and the program and what you guys look for in startups that you guys want to invest in. But let's talk about that more after the break.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from the break. We are still with Jay Handler. Again, told us the early hustles, the bookie hustle that he had, and also the Nolens hustle. I don't see the Southern twang, but hopefully when he's drunk, it comes out. What I want to understand now is the Deloitte hustle, being in a Big Four. And you mentioned prior to the break that you didn't have a good first boss. And this is such a transformative experience for a lot of us hustlers, because when you're lucky, you get a good role model and that person's going to be a mentor for life. Or you get someone that you don't want to emulate and you just have a peg of who not to be as a leader and who as a future professional down the road. But I want to understand in Deloitte, because this is the Big Four, we're talking about private equity. This is probably the granddaddy of VC anyway, of how this was formed. Talk to me about that grind. What do you guys do in Deloitte and you're right in the city of Manhattan? This is the epicenter of how those things are done. What did you learn and what was the grind like when you were doing that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, man, when you get into these, first of all, I just want to say that I was in the private equity tax practice. So yeah, sure, we were working with these private equity firms as our clients, but we were on the more like the back office for them. We were doing the tax structures and the accounting. So we weren't, office deal making with them.
But you see the paper trail though at that
level. You definitely see the paper trail. you're cleaning up, but that's for sure. Right. Yeah. So working at Deloitte, again, I agree with you completely that the first boss thing can be very transformative. I mean, I think, as soon as I had that guy and worked with him for 3-4 months, I was like, okay, like I can't work here. Like this is just not for me. Like I felt that. I don't know if I would have felt that if I had an amazing guy, maybe one of the guys I ended up working with 5 months in, let's say, had I started with him, maybe I would have, felt a bit better about it. But I think in the end, I didn't want to be in a corporate world anyways. I kind of made that decision anyhow, because I don't like being told what to do. I'm too I just don't like it. What do you want me to do? I don't like to be told what to do. I love criticism and feedback, but I don't like to be told to go and sit around and press numbers.
It's the rugby player in you. That's it.
Yeah, a bit of rebellion, let's just say. But the grind was, I started in January, okay? And busy season, this starts by like February for tax season, because tax season is April, or really, depending on extensions and whatnot, I can go later, but pretty much thrown right into it. This was actually during the time of COVID. So I started Deloitte was contracted to help process a bunch of the PPP loans, but I don't know if you remember this, but the government gave huge loans to any company that pretty much could prove if their taxes were.
They can build shit.
Yeah, exactly. So they were just throwing out money everywhere. So we were like, Deloitte was one of the people contracted by the government to help process these things. So we were pretty much saying, yeah, you can give him the money. Yeah, give him the money. You were the bunch of idiots that were just saying yes.
You felt like Oprah.
Yeah, I did, man. I was like, yeah, approved. I mean, it was actually a bit crazy. Like, I mean, we had certain things we had to make sure that they were doing. Based on their tax returns and income and whatnot. There had to be certain criteria to be met, but I mean, to be honest, there were so many thousands, tens of thousands done. I bet 80% of them were just nonsense. Anyway, so that this was just like a random thing that I wasn't really hired for, but it was such a big profit center for Deloitte, even though it wasn't their core business, that they just threw everybody on it. They were just making too much money. So that's how I started for the first 2 months. And I was like, all right, like get me, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't want to be doing this. Like, get me off. You can outsource this for a tenth of my cost. I don't know why you're doing it with me. And then I started working on this when I moved to Blackstone and started working with them. And busy season, they had thousands of partners that are part of their big fund. So we have to issue K-1s to them. Because of all their offshore structures, I won't bore you with it, but because of all their offshore entities and whatnot, you have to file all these different kinds of forms that are like super complex, depending on who owns it. Are they foreign ownership? Are they locally owned? If they own something abroad, does that own something in the US? And it's just like such complex nonsense. Again, not for me, but that's what we were dealing with, is a lot of like understanding the logic of how these big funds are set up and then helping them file proper taxes so they don't get destroyed by the IRS. So that's really what we were doing. I was in Excel all day, making sure their accounting was properly set up. We were just doing financial statement stuff, and we would take their audited financials and get them ready to be turned into tax financials. So there's essentially the gap. Again, I don't want to get too specific here. You can cut this if you want later, but there's
it's all good.
Yeah,
I like it.
There's the US gap. So the generally accepted, the accounting principles accepted in the United States. This accounting is on an accrual basis, meaning even if you have an expense now, even though you didn't pay it out in cash, you put it on your books. The tax process of when you file your taxes, the accounting you actually do is cash based accounting. So you have to turn it from accrual to cash. So if you have like, if you didn't really pay that expense out, you
shouldn't be paying for tax on that one.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, so we were turning GAAP tax like all day long.
Oh man.
All their auditing GAAP financials and turn them into tax financials. So it was terrible. Anyway, it was interesting. Listen, I learned a lot and my accounting skills are pretty strong, I would say, after that year, but it just wasn't for me and that's okay.
But that was done. You're going to have to go and move on to the next hustle. And that's what I wanted to ask, because again, I'm looking at your LinkedIn, right? January 2022, it says here that you're now became a partner in Seaborn Capital in South Manila. Actually, what's Seaborn Capital and how did you even get here?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one also. So first of all, I think I just one step back. I think the reason I went when I went dig into my decisions in my life, the reason I ended up picking the accounting route and the CPA route was just as a comfort thing. Meaning, if all else fails, I can always be an accountant and go make my own money and I'll be fine. And I don't have to work for anybody with a CPA. So that was like a safety thing for me. So I'm happy I did that. But then I realized I need to be more entrepreneurial. I guess the safety of the CPA allowed me to get a bit more aggressive with my job process.
Right. So, you can always go back to that.
Yeah, exactly. So I started interviewing in a few places. I got a job at a lending company in New York. It was actually pretty interesting. I very close to taking it, actually. We were in the final stages of negotiating with them on kind of the offer that they gave me. And then a friend of my oldest brother, his name is Pran. He's a Sri Lankan guy. They went to GW together, George Washington University. And this is my brother who's now 42. So like the same age. Anyway, they lived together. They were roommates in college and they've been friends since. At one point I was complaining to him about my job and he was like, how do you feel about going to the Philippines? I was like, what?
Whoa.
I was like, I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm kind of open to it. Actually. I'm like, I'm willing.
At that point, I want to understand, what do you know about the Philippines?
So I had always wanted to come back to Asia. I had spent 6 months in Hong Kong during my Tulane years, an exchange program. And I freaking loved it. And I had
Where were you sent?
I went to HKUST, which is Hong Kong University of Science and Tech.
Got it.
On the Kowloon side.
Right.
And it was awesome. Like, I freaking loved it. I got there. I was like, holy shit, this is a bit crazy.
Neon signs on everything.
Exactly. So yeah, I've loved that experience. And then I was like, I need to come back to Asia one day. This is awesome. I had went to Palawan for a week with a buddy of mine during that.
Oh, shit. Wow.
I had been to the Philippines once.
The fact that you say it the right way is already big kudos. Because motherfuckers always say Palawan.
Like, Palawan, yeah. Listen, yeah. I was saying that until I came here. So but now that I've been living here for 2 years, I've adjusted. I have the anyway, so that's about all I knew about it, other than Duterte. I don't know if I should be saying this, but it just killing a bunch of people in the street.
So he's out of power. That's safe now. You can say that.
Yeah. So, great beaches. And, you know, from what we hear you only hear the bad, you know, on the other side of the world. So I didn't know much about it. But he had been, this guy Pran had been, he has a call center here still. To have 500 plus people. Now it actually has about half of that because it's been digitized his business, but still running it. So that's, he knew about the Philippines. He's been coming for many years as he's been operating that. And he said, listen, I've been doing quite well. I want to start making some aggressive bets. How do you feel about going to the Philippines, finding some places to invest? I already put some money with somebody so you can go work with
him
for the first year or whatever until you figure out what you want to do. I said, yeah, it's awesome, man. Like
that.
This guy that pretty much said, go figure it out. I have pretty much a company, a startup you can work at until you figure it out. And then kind of I'm backing you, whatever you decide to do. So like the confidence that gave me to just come out here, like I knew he was behind me to, you know, back whatever I did. And if something went wrong, he knows some people to help and whatnot. So I felt safe in that sense, but also I didn't know a single person here and it was a bit of a leap. So we ended up creating this entity called Seaborn Capital, right? So I actually started that with him.
Nice. And
once I got here, I pretty much found ways. I quickly met, I had a, it's just a random connection. It was a Filipina lady, the mother of a friend of mine in the community back home, in the Jewish community. I'm Jewish. She is a very good friend of the family. And she also knows people here. Obviously, she's Filipino. She came from the Philippines. So I said, hey, like anybody you can put me in touch with her brother who connected me to Jesse Maxwell, who's one of the Fox.
Oh, okay.
So that like within 2 weeks, you know, I had met Jesse and they were raising fund 2 of Foxmont. So I pretty much went to Pran. I was like, listen, you know, we can get into the scene pretty quickly by buying our way in almost. So that was one of the first things we quickly did was looked at that fund they were raising for a while. And I was like, listen, if we're here to invest in startups, and we have a thesis that the Philippines demographically is a great place to be doing it with the economics of the country at the moment. And so we said, screw it. We put some money with them. And then that kind of sparked my entrance into the VC scene locally.
Got it.
I was able to meet Franco and all these guys and Mark. That's how I met Mark. You know, so I met all these guys, and it just that network effect snowballed immensely.
And you got to the right guys. You didn't get introduced to a random Trump. You got introduced to Jesse freaking Maxwell. That's top dog right away.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy in the world. I mean, like, he's super cool. We met him. Like, I had no idea who the guy was. I mean, a friend back home was like, oh, we know somebody. Like, yeah, he's pretty, like, you know, they have a big company, a big shipping and logistics business there. I was like, oh, it'd be great to talk to. So anyway,
shipping business here, by the way.
No, I know. But that, I had no clue, right? So that was almost, it's almost nicer not to know, because then, I mean, you know, it's
just, you don't get intimidated.
Yeah.
What was when you got here? Okay. So this is all rainbows and butterflies. What were the hard parts that you had to adjust to? Because again, fresh out the boat, but from the other side.
Yeah.
Right? Now you go here and say, like, was there a culture shock, or was the biggest adaptation that you've seen?
It was a huge culture shock. I mean, I didn't even
rice. Was it rice on rice?
Yeah,
on
started
rice?
Putting on weight pretty quickly. Eating a lot of rice, but seeing the extreme poverty on even just coming from the airport to Makati was like, whoa, that was already crazy, right? I think when I came like many years ago, we were at night. We just quickly stopped over Manila and left super early. I mean, so. Yeah. You know, I didn't really see much. So that was
it's night and day difference. There are going to be sides of town where like, holy shit, this is posh. This is, am I even in the Philippines?
Exactly.
And then one wrong turn is like, holy shit, I'm in the slums.
Yeah. So that seeing like the extreme poverty was like, whoa, like this is that kind of, you know, there's plenty of poverty in the States, but like, you know, it's intense here in certain areas. So that was for me, you know, now for better or for worse, I'm probably more jaded and can handle it. It's just part of the world, right? So that was an eye-opening thing. And then, you know, my first year, I was working with this company called Comento that we ended up investing in. That was the one that Pran had put money with that sent me here to start working with. This is a logistics business, an e-commerce and logistics business. They pretty much go and buy all of the returned items from these big logistics players. So, you know, there's COD, right? Cash on delivery. If you're not there to pick up the item, that item goes back to the warehouse and sits around and... Yes, that's it. So these logistics companies sell this stuff in mass. Like, they have warehouses full of returned items and they sell it for pennies on the dollar. So this company goes and buys all this stuff and resells it. So I was driving to Valenzuela every day for over a year. Yeah, man. Like,
you drove?
I drove, and then eventually.
Okay, I got to go on tangent here real quick. This is a totally different conversation.
Yeah, I bought myself.
What was it like driving on the right side of the I mean, where we drive like the US.
Yeah.
The type of drivers we have here, what was the driving experience like?
Yeah, well, you know, the only time where I was like, I can't do this anymore was in the car. That's when, like, there have been times where I've just been losing my mind. I was like, I just can't stay here. I mean, obviously that was at the early stages, but like, yeah, I bought myself a car and I had to get up there somehow. So
From where? Or you drove to Valenzuela from where?
I drove from BGC. So,
oh my God.
It was a freaking nightmare, man. And they were trying, like, and once I was in BGC already living here, they were trying to get me to get an apartment in like QC. And I was like, you know, I had just gotten here. I was like a bit, I wanted to be in something where I felt, at least my home felt a bit comfortable. I didn't know anything about QC at the time. I would live there, no problem. But BGC is like the most familiar to me, let's say, which is, you know, I didn't come here to just be comfortable and be in a familiar place, but.
Well, you drove all the way to, I wouldn't even do that.
Like, man, nah. What a nightmare. And then in times of the year, like if I left not so late, like I either had to leave the warehouse at 3 p.m. or 9. Like there was no,
good luck.
Leave any time in between, I'm 2 hours in the car. So like,
yep.
Drove me fucking nuts.
That's the better, perfect time to listen to podcasts, actually, right there.
You don't know how much Joe Rogan I listen to. His 3-hour episodes, I mean, I probably listened to 50. I mean, it's just like, yeah. So at some point I actually got fed up because I spent 2 hours in a car one day and I was like, listen, one evening. And I said, mm-hmm. I might as well get a driver because, you know, if I can work for these 2 hours at night,
yeah, exactly.
4.5 in the morning, like, this is,
or at least you can get some Z's or sleep, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I ended up getting a driver and he was awesome. And yeah, he actually left recently. That's a whole other story.
Oh, he's hiring. Whoever wants to have a poggy, no. Poggy ammo. Right there, we have
a man, so working in this warehouse too was a very interesting experience. I mean, we had an office in there, obviously. But yeah, everyone was Sir Poggy. That's kind of my nickname around the warehouse.
Oh, there you go. See?
Which was hilarious because... for many reasons, but yeah, it was a very different crowd, right? I mean, you're not getting the UP grads and the Mataneo grads working in the warehouse there. So that was actually a really cool experience. I was really felt like I was working in this country as we're in this bubble in BGC where it's just high society and the VCs.
Nah, that's not the real Philippines, man.
No, it's not. So I actually,
Valenzuela is the real Philippines.
That's as real as it gets. I mean, as real as it gets. So that was super unique experience for me, I would say. And I think I gained a lot from it and understood how how these people operate and live here. I mean, it's a very different lifestyle than all the let's say what people consider Metro Manila, although that is in Metro Manila technically, but yeah,
that's the northern part. The northern, that's Winterfell. Yeah. Right there before you go.
There you go.
No, but how did then from this point, so you've been doing Seabourn, and of course you acted like a fund of funds to invest in Foxmont Fund 2 that you deployed directly. How did that turn into Founders Launchpad?
Yeah, so we did a couple of VC investments, actually one coming out of India that was awesome. And it's called Gushwork. The guy's super cool. That guy's just a killer. So we did one investment there, but then we did one here also. We did a couple of different investments here on hey, this is a cool company. We did some diligence and there's a guy we'd like to back. So we did a few random opportunistic investments. And then I don't know if you've met Thomas and Simon, my two co-founders. I don't know if you've met them in the past, but
I'm pretty sure I've seen them. I haven't gotten a chance to talk to them.
They were the Germans one German, one Austrian that was brought over by Mark Kuiman, and they worked with AHG Labs for the good part of 2 years. They came in kind of when I did, March of 2022. We met very early on and became friends. We did some traveling together. We just
traveling to Valenzuela. Did you take them to the hood?
I didn't take them to the hood. They haven't.
You gotta take them to the hood.
They're not ready for that, man. They're not ready for that. we spent a lot of really good time together, really enjoyed each other's company. And then, you know, they started putting together under the guise of AHG Lab, they started putting together Founders Launchpad, just them two really taking the reins on it and co-founding it together, putting it together. And then they said, hey, we need some capital to make this thing happen. So I said, all right, this could be an interesting thing. You know, we come in as the fund manager with them, essentially, to create this entity. And we put the capital up, or the majority of it. We actually were able to raise some from another American guy that I had met here in the Philippines, actually. But so us, Seabourn, and I mean, really, it's Pran's capital. But, you know, Seabourn is a big shareholder in the thing. And then Thomas, Simon, and I are pretty much the co-founders of it.
So that's how it was formed. So AHG and Seabourn made love, and Founders Launchpad was technically the baby.
Exactly. So that's how it happened. I mean, there's a lot more nuances involved, obviously, but it was under AHG where Thomas and Simon were working. They created this. Mm-hmm. So of course, AHG is a shareholder. And then Thomas, Simon brought me in and we decided to fund it. And then the goal was to do one program, see how it went. And then if it was a success, we spin it out into its own entity outside of AHG. So now we're a Founders Launchpad. It's its own company. That's a big distinction. It says it's not involved with AHG's operations at all. Although we do have them as a partner, of course, to provide some back office services if needed. Mm. But yeah, so now it's its own entity and running, man. We're on the move.
But why was it? Why did you choose the accelerator route versus like the just a typical, say, Foxmont round where they're already deploying it at a cash? What did you see in this space where that's the place where you're gonna invest in?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were able. There was a bit of an opening there because First of all, the goal of all these, you know, all LPs in the world and all funds are always asking the fund managers, like, hey, how are you going to get in early, or how early can you get into these companies? Because that's how you really generate the you know, uncorrelated alpha, as they say. So if you can get in earlier, over 100 something companies, a couple of them do well, it's fantastic. So we essentially saw that there were a bunch of these incubators, government programs, like these oddly run or not full-time ran programs that were not really, you know, hands-on helping all these founders. There were, of course, Foxmon, Kaya, Gentry, Kickstart, all these guys have, like, you know, they're fantastic investment firms, but, and you want to get to them, but you don't have anybody really before them, at least in a full-time program basis. Like, there are,
that actually deploys capital. I mean, there's some grant funds, thing. But the problem with the grant funds is it's a lot of the people that are nurturing the startups aren't practitioners.
Right.
So what are you going to teach those guys?
Yeah. So that's the thing. We pretty much do our best to bring in, each week's different. So we have different focuses, but everything from financial modeling to how to interview your customers, stuff as basic as that, at least the point of interviewing your customers.
And how to drive to Valenzuela in the best possible route.
Exactly. So that's 2 weeks of the curriculum, actually. Everybody apply and you'll be really good at that. So we just pretty much go over everything needed in a startup. So again, let me say financial modeling isn't that important at super early stage, but customer interaction, even pitching, pitch deck building. Mm. Yeah. I mean, just operating within, just getting things done, executing properly. I should probably give you better examples here. This is not that clear, but for example, some of the stuff we did was help these guys. Hiring is a big thing. So we help with interviewing even some of the people that these guys are hiring and helping them set up their contracts where, you know, some of them don't even know what ESOP is or, you know,
oh my God.
Right. So you're 30% of my company. And then the guy just disappears. Whoops. Like, what are you going to do? So vesting and cliffs.
There's not an undo button. Unfortunately, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's just a hassle. So the undo button is putting cliffs and vesting schedules on the equity, right?
Yep.
So, but we help them hire, we interview a lot of the people there. We even help them source candidates. We help them build Facebook ads and, you know, create their websites most optimally with UI, UX. We bring in as many founders as possible in the ecosystem. So we have great connections. I think the investment in Foxmont also got us access to all those founders, right? So we tap them also to say, hey, do you care to come in and do a session on whatever you want to do? I mean, if it's fundraising or operating or how not to give up or like, you know, because they all go through the same stuff. They go through these tough times when you're faced with a super tough challenge. Sometimes you want to give up or whatever it may be. Mm. All these guys are really working in the same space to some degree, obviously different industries, but so that we try to just put them in front of as many founders as possible. That was also the best feedback we got from all the founders we invested in were these talks from other founders and more experienced ones that have raised further rounds and have really built some awesome with by far and away the best sessions that we did. So obviously on the next one, we're going to be really focused on that. Yeah. So it's really from A to Z as much as we can possibly teach them. And we're also like part-time co-founders with them. Like we're again, helping build their websites. We're doing the research for them or with them. Let's just say we have analysts and associates going to be helping us with that and, you know, market research for them, the size of the market, who are the players, who are the competitors. So when they go out and talk to VCs, they're actually quite knowledgeable about what the hell market they're operating in. They know how big it is roughly. They can speak pretty coherently and strongly about their customer base and who they're going to go after. And it's really the big thing we emphasize for them is focus. You know, we get some of these applicants we're seeing like, oh, I want to build the all-in-one solution for blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, like you need to build one thing that works and does well.
Get a win. Somewhere,
then you can add other features. But like, you know, Google can now is more of an, you know, they're not even all in one, but they're adding a ton of features. But yeah, they've been around for 30 years and they have billions of people using their stuff. So it's a different, you know, you don't start out as Google. You have to just, they also started out focused on one thing, right? The point is we really emphasize that and try to keep these guys focused and not get too excited about all the millions of opportunities there possibly are, which there are many.
Yeah.
There are really a lot. That's not I think the opportunity set is clear. It's just the execution piece. So, and that's another thing, like when it comes to us, picking, you know, we learned a lot from this first cohort on the investment side. Like you never know. And everyone says like, oh, it's all about the founder, you know, when you're investing in startups, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You never know. Like you never conceptualize that until you fuck up and then put money with the wrong.
Correct.
Like you just never, like you just don't. You don't know. You don't feel until you feel that like, oh, wow, it's really the guy that just can't do it. Like you never really can sit, like take that in, that advice in until you just blow it. Not that,
absolutely,
but you know.
It's like fumbling the ball. You think you're never going to do it, or at least you know what it feels like, but until you fumble
and then it hurts.
You see the other guy go to do a touchdown right in front of you. That's it. That's the feeling. But I want to understand two things. You can't do this alone. So you guys are the three boys, you know, who started this out. How do you surround yourself with the right team? And the next question I have is, what type of program did you guys develop? Because again, instead, if it's a YC style type of execution, that's a very high standard that you're going to hold people onto. And I'm not sure a lot of people are built for a YC style of acceleration program here in the Philippines.
Right.
So how did you build that team and how did you build the program?
So the team is Thomas, Simon, and I. These guys are awesome. Like I would recommend to everybody to work with Germans in your life because no, I mean, I'm not kidding. Like
that's efficient.
Efficient, organized, and they're not afraid to just spend time doing something if it like and watching videos on how to do it and figuring it out and spending the time. Like a lot of people, like, oh, I can't do this in 5 minutes. I'm done. Like I'm not working on it. Like they will sit down, look at it, figure it the fuck out and get it done. So it's like been amazing to work with them. And they really just spend the time to keep organized. Like if you look at our data, how we process all the, even the applicants from the first round, all of the people we've interviewed, just about 200 people we've interviewed, we have notes on every single one of them, ratings, all their contact information, resume and everything. So when we want to go back and maybe hire them later, we can do that or even recommend to other people. The point is they're fantastic. So working with them has been amazing. So that's number one. And the team, we have Alea, who you know, who's also fantastic.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out. Yeah, she's very crucial in being the, let's say, mother to the startups because we are the, okay, you're doing this wrong, like very direct German US way of operating, where Alea is the one that can handle the, really understands the Filipino way of working with one another. She also understands our way of working with one another. So she's a great intermediary between founders and us. So that's like a super crucial piece to the puzzle, actually. And then we also have a few interns. We're actually hiring now an associate, like an investment associate and a marketing associate. So
there you go.
This should be those. We're actually having amazing candidates. We're super excited about the ones that we have in the top few. And we've put a lot of effort on building this is a business that ideally has to be alive for like 10, 12 plus years, maybe 20.
Yep.
I don't know.
It's a long game, man.
The investment business is like you build that over many, many years. So having a team is like super crucial that likes being around you guys. So we spend a lot of time. I'd say it's a more progressive office environment where, like, you know, we have weekly stand-ups on every Monday, make sure everybody's on top of their stuff. It keeps people accountable. But, you know, we are very hands-off in the sense that get your work done. We're not going to be on top of you about it as long as you're getting it done. And I think that works very well for the team that we have. We have had absolutely no problems with that so far. Everybody's at the moment remote, even though we do have an office in Poblacion, which is another great part about the program, by the way. You spoke about how we end up doing a YC style program. Of course, we're not going to be YC on day one.
But as long as you're near OnlyPants, then you're going to be all right.
Yeah, that's our edge over YC. No, but we have a building that, you know, we have rooms where the founders can sleep in. And we have co-working spaces. So we're literally with them 24/7. Obviously, we don't sleep there. I have, I must say. I have slept
there. Hey, if you can go to Valenzuela, you can be anywhere, my man. You're going to be right.
So we have slept there, but, you know, the point is everybody's in-house together, like building together. There's this awesome energy about it. So, but the nice thing about our program is we just get as many super strong founders and investors locally and even foreign founders and foreign investors on calls and just get them in front of the ones we take in and we invest in, really build their network and put them in the best position for them to execute their business and meet as many people as possible, get the connections that they need. You know, we connect wherever we can. if there's somebody that needs a medical distributor, we will scour our network to find that for them. Mm-hmm. We hope that they also scour their network to find it, because we can't do everything, of course, but we're almost like a management supplement in each of these companies during those 3 months, really helping them as much as we can. And yeah, we hope that it makes an impact. I think Kipop, one of the companies we invested in, like, they're just fantastic.
Yeah, those kids are legit.
They really, I think one of the things I learned also over the first group of companies is that even if they're not the best team to maybe do it, if they listen and implement suggestions if there's progress from point A to point, from meeting A to meeting B,
yes,
and they're actually implementing suggestions. Listen, we don't know everything, but we know, I think in this, some senses more than they do. They know more than us in many things too, engineering specifically. But on the business side of things, they actually implement a lot of things and changes that we suggest, and they're happy about it. They're happy we're teaching them, and we see really good results in a lot of it. For example, we told them it would be really nice if you guys hired a performance marketing specialist, because you need somebody to help you with, really focus on ads and look at the numbers of the metrics of the ads that you're running and turn the ones off that are bad, spray on the ones that are good, et cetera. So they did that. We helped them interview and find somebody amazing, and they've just had a record month in November and going for more than that in December. So this is the stuff that's so nice for us, A, to see that we're able to help them, but B, that these guys are taking the advice, and they know they aren't the best at everything. They're not too confident, not too cocky, but they built something amazing, and they're willing to bring other people in that know more than them, and their business is just doing great. So it's a great example of the kind of people we like to mentor, let's say.
All right. Sounds good. Now let's take our last break, and when we come back, we will discuss the type of verticals and the type of founders they are actually looking for, and of course, the learnings that they've got on the very first cohort. But let's talk about that more after. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh, payroll-starter-monthly-5K, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer, trust Dragon Pay.
Break. And we're back from the break. We are still with Poggy J Handler, who you probably gotten used to that already, right?
Yeah.
I was like, ah, there you go. I tell that myself. I tell that to a lot of people too, but most people don't believe me. So if they throw that to you naturally, that means you're a real OG Poggy.
There you go. Love that. Yeah, I think the girls at the warehouse are still,
swooning over you, right?
It was nice on my birthday. They made a bunch of, big posters that said like, oh, happy birthday, Sir Poggy.
Was it Poggy Mania? Man, oh my God. Poggy Bowl.
You have no idea.
There you go.
I couldn't win there.
Oh man. All right. So what I want to find out again, you told us already how you established Founders Launchpad and how this team was formed, the type of program. But I want to understand first, of course, it all boils down to the startups, right? What type of startups did you invest in the first cohort, and what are you looking for in the next coming cohorts that you guys are going to invest in?
Yeah. So, I mean, our basic criteria is you must be using tech in some capacity to operate your business. That still encompasses e-commerce, even though it's really like a retail play, right? It's online retail, right? As long as you're using online, some sort of tech, we're interested. So tech, Philippines is a first market. So you got to be focused here. I mean, I think that's a bit loose. Like if you're here and you have a product that can be pretty much sold to the UAE or something, I guess, of course we're interested, but so that's a bit of a loose one, but really the two biggest are Philippines first market and you gotta be using tech. Those are like the things that you have to have in it for us to even look at you. So that's really the ones we invested in on the first cohort, six different industries from e-commerce to online pharmacy, online and offline pharmacy marketplace, FinTech apps, whatever you want, we are interested. We even have a company called Resbin, which is plastic waste
with recovery. Mari.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, ex-Kumu. Yeah. Yeah, they're awesome, that duo, brother-sister duo. They're fantastic. They're building something really cool. I'm really excited for them. But so it has to be, again, tech, Philippines first. And you have to be, willing to work and show us that you can properly execute.
Hustle.
Yeah. At the end of the hustle, there you go. At the end of the day, we're sitting around like, when you're investing in, let's say when you're doing a loan, you're underwriting the credit risk of the borrower. When you're investing in the private equity, you're looking at the EBITDA that the company's generating and seeing if you can play with that. We're underwriting execution risk. Like that's what VC is underwriting, right? Like, can this person actually do it? So or what is the chance that this person can't do it almost? So right. Thomas, Simon, and I have some operating experience, but by no means do we have the 10 years, 12 years that we haven't built the company and sold it, right? So we don't have that super nuanced view or advice that we can pass along, which is why we rely heavily on a lot of the partners that we have. So especially the guys funding us, both have amazing businesses and have been operators for many years and are doing very well.
Town, shipping, whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, like a lot of these guys are
call centers.
Yeah, but his business in the US is actually a third party collections business.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Wow. So it's a cool company. But anyway, he's been running for 15 years and the guy's just doing fantastic. And he's just smart and he has a lot of really good insight from just bootstrapping his own company. Right. So we have great guys behind us. And we try to bring in as many locals, founders here. Again, I've said this a few times this call, so I don't want to keep repeating myself. But we, yeah, we try to put these great founders in and do workshops with them, put our investees, let's say, in front of these great founders and let them learn from these guys. Mm. So this is how we listen to them in terms of, you know, who better to decide or, let's say, underwrite somebody's ability to execute than guys that have just done it a bunch of years of their life, right? We rely on them a lot on the investments that we actually decide to make, if they think the founder can get it done or not. We also have, we're a bit unique in the sense that obviously we have guys on the ground here, which you need, but you can't only have that because it makes it a bit tough to step back and step away from what you're doing and look at it in a non-biased point of view. So we have the guys in the US we rely on a lot to kind of digest the information that we on the ground are sending them and try to make sense out of it to come up with some investment thesis. So like, you know, they're you can't have just people on the ground. You can't have just people overseas because they're not here. They have no idea what's going on. The duo is pretty important, I think, you know, because we can get so excited about something and then they ask a very basic question that we just overlook and we're like, oh shit, you know, that's yeah. Not important. So that kind of stuff is cool and unique about us, I think also. But yeah, so that, again, I mean, it's a long way of saying how we look at companies we invest in. The real criteria are, of course, the non-negotiables are tech and Philippines first. And then we get into, can this person do it? How's their background? Are they, you know, the best case scenario for us, somebody that's done it one or two times before, super successful in that, and then coming to do it again, they probably won't need an accelerator. That's, right. That's the only issue. We do have a guy, Al, actually he's successfully and sold a business and has been a founder a few other times. So he's a fantastic find for us. And I think the number one thing that we will end up seeing, and I think I've seen it in Foxmont's portfolio companies and some of the other investors here, is a founder that has been overseas to a more developed country and has seen what good execution looks like.
Yes.
studied or worked overseas and has seen what that looks like. And then they come back here. They have
sea turtles.
Yes, exactly. And then they come back here and they have the nuanced local view, right, of the Philippines, let's say, for example, or if it's another emerging market country, then so be it. But they understand locally and they see what good execution looks like overseas and then they apply that here. So those are the ideal ones. And I think Foxmont has a few of those and they're all doing really nicely. They're building great businesses. And at the end of the day, they know what they know how to
execute. It's a double win. If they get to Foxmont, you guys win because you're an LP. Right. If they're early on or they're trying to create one, then they need to join you guys.
Yeah. What would be nice is if we get, you know, these bigger VCs to back us and say pretty much you like force founders to come through us in order to get investment from them. That would mean we have to get everybody on board in the on the actual GP position. So I don't know how that is, but that would be nice if we can almost not gatekeep, right? We're not competitive, but it would be nice to have that. Those guys behind us in a sense that they're ready for follow-on capital later.
Absolutely.
Another thing also, just one last piece about it. The business has to be at least able to generate some decent level of
revenue,
cash flow or revenue. Yeah, exactly. Because it doesn't need to be profitable at the onset, but you know, there isn't in these emerging markets, there isn't that much capital downstream that can support an Uber losing a $50 million a month forever. Right. There just isn't that. Of course, you get bigger guys from Singapore, let's say, coming in later if it's super, super successful. But we like businesses that can actually make money in not super long term, because at the end of the day, it has to be operating in a market that has a huge potential. But at the end of the day, if they don't take a huge piece of that pie, of that huge potential pie, they still are running a business that can be profitable and doesn't go to zero. So that's another thing that is important that we like.
And what's the deal structure like? How much do you guys typically put in if they get accepted? And then what's the equity that you typically take? And how early do you come in? Do you need to be the first check, or can you be like a follow on already?
Yeah, we don't need to be the first check. We can be in a later one. I think mostly it's angels that are before us, if ever. But usually we're the first. I mean, that's typically how it has been. I think it was one case we weren't. There were some angels there. But we do a deal where we come in at a sub 1 million valuation. So, and we put up to 100,000. So on the first, it's a bit variable in the sense that, you know, One thing I'd say that we're aware of is in VC, you don't really know who's going to do well. So like to say, oh, you get 100, you get 50, you get 25 is quite silly, because the VC game is, of course, I'm sure you've heard it, it's a power law, and you have to have a ton, a diversified basket of investments, and hopefully a few of them will do well, right? You're banking on one or two to drive the returns of the fund. So we say up to 100,000, and we're willing to do that, of course, that's what we say. But the goal is to take about 7 to 10% of the company and with the investment that we put in. So up to 100,000, meaning our goal would be 10% of an $1 million company, let's just say. And the amount we put in and the percentage we take is going to be dependent on if the founder fights us on the valuation. So if you're super strong and you have a ton of experience and you sold the company before and you have some traction already, you're going to fight us. We're not going to put a $500,000 valuation. You're going to say no to that. You'll probably be like, I need the absolute maximum you're willing to give. So that's where we would go up to 100, right? If they're fighting us and we probably really want to get in there, we would give more on the valuation, but it's kind of dependent a bit on the founder for sure. Because again, the execution risk is what we're underwriting. And we feel really strongly that somebody can do it, based on the criteria I mentioned of maybe going abroad and selling a company and coming back. Rare, but if those guys come, that's where we will be more flexible.
Sounds good. All right. Now, what are the learnings you guys so far? Because typically I ask this from a startup founder's point of view. Hey, you joined this accelerator or incubator. What have you learned? But from your point of view as running this first cohort, what have you learned from, say, that you didn't assume that or you didn't see it coming when you started the program?
Yeah. So the stuff that we learned, we definitely won't invest in a solo founder. I don't want to say definitely not, but very highly likely a solo founder.
Super risky though.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what we saw was that it's really easy to get discouraged as a solo founder when something doesn't go your way. If you're trying to raise money and a bunch of investors say, we don't believe in your product, as a solo guy,
you're going to get crushed.
Yeah, this is not the idea. This isn't for me. We tried to be the soundboard for the founders so they can just say, they can bounce ideas off us, et cetera. But you need that in an everyday thing. You can't have it once a month or once a week or right. So these solo founders need people to,
cheer them on, rally them on, whatever that is.
So you get it. So I think we wouldn't go into another solo founder unless they're extremely talented. Actually, we're iterating on the, obviously, right, we're building a product too. We're at the end of the day, we're a startup, we have operations, so we're also iterating on the product based on the feedback that we got and our learnings. So we're going to try to do a pre-program this time where we can work with the founders for a month prior, and even, by the way, invite solo founders who, it doesn't mean that they would, it kind of like an Antler style where we invite these entrepreneurs to meet
and you assemble.
Exactly. So it doesn't mean we will invest, but we will work with them for roughly a month, give them some things to do, look at their product, give them some feedback, see if how they work with that. And
we get out of the woods, they're in.
Exactly. And if they go through an IC process after that. But I think had we, worked with, I think a month in, I already realized maybe we would have not taken X or Y, after working with them for a month, because it's just, it goes back to a point I mentioned earlier in the call, in the podcast, where if there's no progress happening from meeting A to meeting B, nothing's changing and your meeting notes seem to start looking exactly the same as the prior ones, this is something that's a red flag for us. It's super important to see progress over, if nothing's working and we're saying, hey, maybe you should try this, this, and this, because it looks like this is a pain for the customer, et cetera. And then the next week, maybe you should try this, this, and this, because, we said it last week and nothing's changed and it's still not getting better. So this kind of stuff, I think just being open-minded and listening to feedback as a founder is super important. We'd love to be able to see that. So working with them for a few weeks before the program will give us a lot of that information, I think.
Sounds good. Now, again, invite people over. What are the type of startups you're looking for in this year in 2024 that you guys are going to go in? When is the next cohort going to be?
Yeah, next cohort's going to be, it's either going to start March 15 or April 1.
You want to do 15. April 1 sounds like it was a freaking April Fool's show.
That's a great point. That's a great point. So it might not be April 1, but start of April, let's say. Okay. So either mid-March or start of April. And but we close the applications early February so that we can invite them all to. And beat them.
You just don't want to announce like, hey, we have a new court, April Fools.
Psych. Yeah, the wrong numbers. Yeah.
Psych, bro.
All right. Yeah. So we will be doing it either mid-March or early April. And the kind of startups we're looking for, I mean, a couple of industries that we're really excited about are healthcare, health tech, anything of this nature, obviously massive market, massively underserved market. FinTech is just outrageous. I mean, they're like, man, there's so many opportunities for people to find out how to lend. If it's hard, I mean, it's hard. There's some guys trying to do it, these digital banks. It's really tough. I mean, they're getting smoked. Mm. Like they're I don't know. A couple months ago, I read like some article about Tonic Bank having a 25% NPL, like a non-performing loan book, which is, you know, you're losing money with that. I'll tell you that much. Mm. And I would, by the way, I'd bet you it's more like 50. I mean, if they're coming out with 25, it's probably much worse. So it's tough, is my point, but there are certainly ways. There's like a huge capital crunch here. There's no credit. Businesses can operate. I talk to companies every day that are like, hey man, like, do you lend? I was like, maybe we should start. Right. So fintech companies would be fantastic. Also, the big GDP drivers of the country. So anybody operating in these kind of bigger markets that are proven, so remittances, stuff like that, you have a 10% of the GDP is coming from remittances. So if you can find a way to plug in there, huge market, billions, right? And also the call center industry. I know AI, everyone's a bit scared of this AI thing coming out and, you know, wiping out the call center industry. I think there's a case for that, sure. But I also think that a lot of companies need the personalized touch still. The companies we put money with, the India guy from India that we mentioned a long time ago at the beginning of the call, he is pretty much powering up Filipinos with AI tools and going to businesses and saying, hey, we can pretty much automate all your workflows and use AI tools to be extremely efficient. You could fire all your entry-level people from college that you're paying $100,000 a year to, and you can pay $20,000 a year for somebody in the Philippines who can do just as, if not better, of a job. So like the point is that industry is not going away, I don't think. So any tech that's going to be powering that industry, interested in B2B SaaS, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So fintech, healthcare, I mean, these are novel things you're hearing, I'm sure, but, and the BPO space, like, interested for sure. And of course, e-commerce. So I'd love to see some cool brands come through that are making some new niche product or, you know, a basket of brands or something like this. Super interested in those.
That is amazing. Again, thank you very much, Jay, for telling us the exact thing again. But a lot of people are definitely for sure listening to this and, will definitely apply soon in the next cohort of Founders Launchpad. But again, if they want to apply and if they want to reach out to you, where did they go and how did they do that?
If you want to apply, you can just go to our website, which is founderslaunchpad.vc. This is, you see a big apply now button. You can go ahead and click that. It's a cool, pretty simple application process. We'll ask for, you know, a couple of basic questions. What's the name of your company? We'll ask you to upload a pitch deck and we'll ask you to record a 1-minute video just explaining who you are. Of course, we have a few other questions we ask in there, but nothing too extensive. You can get it done. It's not going to take you a month to get it done. So I think everybody should go apply. Who's listening? If you have friends that are starting companies, tell them to apply. We'd love to take a look at all of them and super excited for this next batch.
All right. Sounds good. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast app. And if you did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes on hustleshare.com. And if you want to, again, be like our amazing premium supporters like Angelo Lee, like Gab Abbott, Gentry Fun, and more, you can subscribe to premium.hustleshare.com. Again, Jay, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. It was awesome. Thanks for having me. You're the man.
All right. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.